Up next, we have our other speaker, who is Tom B, who is from Colorado, or he's a past delegate from Colorado. I don't know if he's still in Colorado. I believe he is. So there's a time difference with him there. Thank you, Tom, for joining us anyways. He also started in Nalatine, so can't wait to hear his story. Whenever you're ready, Tom.
Okay, thanks, guys. My name is Tom Blake, and I am a grateful member of Al-Anon. I want to thank Sal for reaching out and inviting me to participate this tonight. I think this was for me. Anyways, we'll just leave that alone. The first thing, the couple of stories, a couple of things. I tell a lot of stories, so sit back and relax. The first one is that when the rules or the guidelines were popped up on there, they talked about first name and last initial, and I was looking at the participant line, and there was Kathy on there, and it was Kathy Cherry hyphen Garcia, and I thought she needs to change her name, and I didn't realize it was the ice cream. Kathy, thank you for sharing that you're eating Cherry Garcia tonight. I haven't had any ice cream yet tonight, but I will have some a little bit later. We had a situation in our home surrounding ice cream, and my wife has been ordering online, going and picking up the groceries and stuff, and then bringing them home. And we've been having difficulty getting ice cream. So, because ice cream is critical some days. And so, 1 week she ordered it a cup, one piece, and they substituted a different flavor. And at first, I wasn't really sure if I was going to like it, but I've discovered that there's not many flavors of ice cream that I don't like. So I enjoyed that. And then the next week or a week or two later, she ordered some more ice cream. And that time, they didn't have any. So we didn't get any, no substitutions, no nothing. It was very disappointing. And then last week, she put on the list about five different kinds, four or five different kinds, and we hit the jackpot. They were all there. So I have plenty of ice cream downstairs. I just don't know which one I'm going to be eating yet. I want to also say, Sal, thank you so much for your share, because when you and I had talked originally, you had talked about you wanted me to talk about growth through and today I spent about 3 hours preparing for the talk. And what I did was I went through, and the only way, if you look at our service manual, if you look at some of our pieces of literature, it talks about, recovery through the steps, unity through our traditions and service through our concepts. So I went through and I went and I mapped out all 12 traditions. If anything, I'm an overachiever sometimes. And I went through and I also looked up unit or looked up the three words in the dictionary. And because I know it's not conference-approved literature, but I really don't care if you want to turn me into the Al-Anon police about that one. But I looked up the word growth, and it's the process of developing or increasing in size. So whether that's spiritually, mentally, physically, emotionally, it's there. Through is used as a function word to indicate movement within a large expanse, or to indicate exposure to a specified set of conditions. I think I do that when I practice my program, when I do my work. And unity is the quality or state of not being multiple, a condition of harmony, continuity without deviation, or a change as in purpose or action. So with that thought, I went through the 12 traditions. I need to tell you, I'm going to scrap what I wrote because it's ridiculous. It was, thank you for laughing, Bonnie. Bonnie knows me well. It's purely academic, and that's not what I'm here to share because what I know for me is what comes from the heart reaches the heart, and that's what my goal is tonight. And when Sel started talking about her personal experience and in the recovery, it became real clear to me that that's what I get to share tonight too. I started in the rooms of Alateen in January of 1971. Right now I have 49 years of continuous recovery in these rooms. And so it's a scary number. It's a scary number for me because even today, I meet with my sponsor on a regular basis. We meet weekly usually. And even today, I learn new things in doing the work. I shot him a text message on Friday afternoon. And the text message was simply, tell me to take the high road. And he replied back with, you know, a bunch of garbage that sponsors do, like take the high road and have you, I don't know, gone to God with it or something profoundly spiritual. And I just really got, I just knew what it was. And then within 30 seconds, he had called me. And we talked about the situation. And what he did was he got to tell me the principles that I needed to do. And I was just furious with somebody at work. And we're talking about unity. This young man at work was driving me crazy. I was about to beat him because I used to manage him and I used to manage his department. And he was wrong. He was so wrong. And what I discovered was that I wanted to go in there and tell him exactly what he needed to do and how to do it. Because you see, part of my disease is that I want you to be different so I can feel better. And so what was happening was that's really what I wanted to do. I wanted him to conform to exactly to what I needed to do him to do for me so I could be okay. And he wasn't playing the game right. So I started complaining to my sponsor about this. And my sponsor just politely asked me, he said, do you have a copy of your job description? And at that moment, I knew exactly what he was going to tell me. He was going to tell me was managing the accounting team on my job description. And of course it wasn't. And I just told him to shut up. And he just laughed with me. So anyways, there's a lot of things that happen. And by just sending that text to my sponsor and working it out and talking to him about it, unity came in because I didn't have to become an asshole. And I didn't have to go after this young man. And the good news is that I don't owe anybody an amend. And isn't that great? I appreciate that very much. I want to talk a little bit about where I came from. Like I said, I grew up in East Providence, Rhode Island, a little suburb called Riverside. We were the loud house on the block. There was a situation in our home where my father, although not very violent, became violent one night, and he was dragging my sister around by her hair on the floor. And I screamed at him and I said, stop or I'll call the police. And my father turned and looked at me and he said, you call the police and I'll kill you. And you have to understand, my father is big like me and he meant it. My father didn't mince words. And my mom looked at me and said, call the police. And I had to call the police and I dialed the phone and it was a rotary phone and I went from zero to the switch hook and it took forever. And before I knew it, the police were there. And the police came in and they talked through the situation. And I learned at that point that alcoholics are charming, witty, and personable. And they left and they turned to my mom and they said, Mrs. Blake, if he acts up again, call us and we'll take him out. And sure enough, he did. And he was removed on domestic violence charges. Shortly after that, he started going to AA. I don't know if the arrest was anything that helped spur it. I don't know. That's his story. But what I do know is that when he was going into the rooms of AA, there was a group of kids that met down the end of the hall. And he didn't know what was going on, but he knew that they were associated somehow with AA, Al-Anon, and Alateen. And what ended up happening was he came home and he asked my sister and I, if we wanted to go. And I said, my younger sister and I said yes, and we went. And when we got there, it was wonderful because there was consistency. The meeting started on time, ended on time. There was a single sponsor at that time, and she showed up every week, and she was a nun, Sister Mary Karen. And some nights she would be ready to fall asleep sitting up, but she came every week and she supported us. And what a gift that was. And before I continue, are there any Spanish, are you doing translation? Because I am moving fast. No? Yes. Okay. I'm just going to keep going. Maria, if you find out that somebody's being translated, let me know. Thank you. I was one of the few people that transitioned from Alateen into Al-Anon. And Sal, before I transitioned in, I was a conference chair for the Rocky Mountain Alateen Conference. Had a great time doing that. I got into service and I did a lot of service. And when Maria introduced me, she talked about me being a past delegate. And you know, I have served in several different positions and I have loved every single one of them. And what I know is that as I serve, my defects of character get to come out, and it's not pretty. It's just not pretty. So anyways, I transitioned into Alateen, or from Alateen to Al-Anon. And what I want to talk about is a little bit about recovery. Actually, I want to talk a lot about recovery, but I don't have that much time. So part of my recovery story is that I get to do steps 1, 2, and 3. And in step 1, my sponsor talked to me, and we talk about being powerless over alcohol and our lives are unmanageable. And what he talked about was, how are you powerless over alcohol? Because in our meetings, we often talk about how we're powerless over people, places, and things. But the step actually asks us to look at our powerlessness over alcohol. And so he asked me that, and he challenged me with that. And what I discovered was, is that when somebody else I love drinks alcohol, I change because I get fearful. I get concerned. There's a lot of things that happen. I get suspicious or doubtful. And those things come to light in my when I start looking at what the disease of alcoholism does and how it affects me, you know. And the second step, which we talk about insanity. And we're having a lot of family issues right now. For those of you who know that me and my wife, Marilyn and I are doing just lovely. We're fine. But we have other issues going on in our family. And I want to talk about the insanity of the disease at almost 50 years into this program. And that is that about 6 months ago, I had my stepdaughter in the car. And I was taking her back to where she was living at the time. And it was just excruciatingly painful. And what I discovered was that as I was driving, I was plotting her demise. I figured out that if I crossed over the traffic at the wrong time, pulling into where she lived, I could get hit by a truck. It would have been on her side of the car. She probably would not have made it, but I would have with some problems. That's the disease of alcoholism and the insanity. Those thoughts still come into my mind, and those are what keep me coming back. And in the third step, when I get to turn my life and my will over to the care of God, it's real important for me to remember that I really do turn it over and it's there for His care, and how grateful I am for that. And in steps 1, 2, and 3, I need to share that I can get a lot of relief because, you know, I can do we talk about the Al-Anon waltz, and I can do the 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, and I can be okay for a good long time. But that's not what the program tells me. Our fifth tradition reminds us that we're here to help families and friends of alcoholics. And it talks about what do we do? And in the fifth tradition, it talks about we practice the 12 steps of AA ourselves. And practicing the 12 steps does not mean just 1, 2, and 3. So Today I choose to get recovery, and I want recovery. I'm desperate for it. And so I proceeded into doing recovery, and I've done inventory. Inventory is critical. You guys can, all I can say is put pencil to paper when we do inventory. What I've learned lately is that I no longer try to rewrite history when I do my inventory, because you see, I always wanted not to look that bad. And what I discovered is that that's not fearless, and it's not moral, and it's not honest. So in order for me to progress through, I have to put it down and be honest. And in the fifth tradition, or fifth step, I get to share with God, myself, and another human being the exact nature of my wrongs. And my sponsor tells me exactly that I have to go do it three times. And he tells me that I have to go sit with God and reread my inventory, because that's what the step tells me to do. Then I have to sit and reread it to myself. And then I have to go to him and tell him. And what I get to do by that time, or when I share it by that time, I get clarity. I have great clarity on what my part is beginning to look like. And in step 6 and 7, that's when I start the surrender process. I had a friend, she's now in Georgia, but she drove me crazy. We would go to meetings, and she would say, there was this little time in her world where we were talking about 6 and 7. She said, you have to live right here. And she'd clap her hands, and you have to live right between the clap. And it drove me crazy because I didn't understand it. And what I've done is I've gotten to understand what 6 and 7 means. And 6 and 7 for me really does mean that when I'm done with my inventory, when I'm done with the fifth step, I'm usually tired and I'm ready to give it up. And so therefore I'm ready. And in, I had a sponsor who talked to me about my character defects. And he talked about how I had to first find them objectionable. And what I discovered was is that a lot of my defects had character and I really liked them, but I had to give them up. And so it became really important to do that. In our Courage to Change book somewhere, I don't know, I keep looking for the page again and I can't find it. There's a reading about the phrase remove. And when we remove something, it doesn't mean that God just goes ahead and annihilates it and it's completely vaporizes and it's nowhere to be had. It just means moving further away from, creating more distance between the two. And what I've learned is that in step 6 and 7, God has the opportunity to create that distance. And as he creates the distance, I get to grow. I talk about it's our job to leave, it's my job to leave my defects of character at the feet of God. And usually what I find is that they're just little turds wrapped in gold foil, and I put them at God's feet, but they're so shiny and pretty, I want to go back and play with them. I want to go back and visit them. And that's not my job, because I have a lot of work to do in steps 8 and 9. And so I've made my list, usually come straight from the inventory, which is great, until you talk to my sponsor. And he tells me to add people to the list simply because, anyways, he just does. And the pity is that I get mad, but he's right. So having good sponsorship is really important to have. So I've made my list and I've gone out and I made the amends. I want to talk about 3 amends really quickly. And the first one is that, oh God, which one? Shit. I'll do my stepdaughter. There was a point where I did the inventory, I did the work, and I wrote out, I didn't know how to make the amend to her. And my sponsor said, write a letter. And I wrote the letter. And I brought it back to him the next week, and he said, read it to me. And I read it to him. And when I read it to him, he said, very good. And he asked me to reread it to him. And as I was rereading it to him, he would say to me, stop, cross that out. And I go, And we'd read a little bit more and he'd say, stop, take that out. And you see, what he was telling me to do was, I was reading to him the letter, and the letter said something along the lines of, when you did this, that's not my part. He had me cross it out. When your mother or father said or did this, cross that out. That was not the exact nature of my wrong. That was still me blaming somebody else for my behavior. And how grateful I was. And when I made the appointment to meet with her and do the 12th step, it was right around her birthday, and I made the amend, and I asked her, you know, what can I do to right this wrong? And she said to me, I'll get back to you. And I had to wait 2 years for her to get back to me. And when she got back to me, she said, I don't know what's different, Tom, but things have changed and you're different. And I want you to just continue what you're doing. And what a gift that was for me. Recovery amends continue. My sponsor tells me that. And what I've discovered is that right now we're having trouble with my stepdaughter. There's no doubt about it. But in that process, what I've learned is that the way I can continue to be to do the amend is to change my behavior. And what I've discovered for me is that if you were to call me and ask me to come over and fix something for you, first of all, that would be stupid on your part because I can't fix anything. But if you invited me over, I would come over and it would be an opportunity for me to be of service. And I would do it and I'd turn and leave. But when she was asking me, I was getting angry and resentful over it. So today I've changed my attitude. So now when she asks for me to come over and help, it's now an opportunity for service. And what a difference that is in that process. I want to talk about the amend that I made with my father. My parents always wanted to hear me speak, and I always said, oh, I'll send you my tape. And I never did. And finally, I did. I sent them one. I had 20 minutes to speak. They recorded me, and it was a good talk, and I sent it to them, and they just loved it. And so I took that on as a part of my amend. And then I was talking about amends to my sister, or my sister said, remember when Dad made amends? And I said, Dad never made amends to me. And long story short, my sister ratted on me, told my dad that I had never received an amend from him. My dad called me in tears. And I said, Dad, it's okay, because healing had already taken place. In my heart, I had forgiven and forgotten, and I moved on. But it was important for him to make that amend again, and he did. And when he opened his mouth and started to say, I'm sorry I was such an asshole. And all of a sudden, I remember him making that amend. I caused him pain. I caused him to have to make that amend another time. And I had to look at that, and I had to rework it, and I had to do more amends work with him. And what ended up happening was that my dad was suffering from Alzheimer's, and my mom had just passed away, and I was at the nursing home that my dad was in, and I was feeding him lunch. And he grabbed my arm and pushed my arm down to the table, and he looked at me and he said, I was a bad man, I did terrible things. And I said, it's okay, Dad, I know. And then I started feeding him some more. And he did the same thing, and he pushed my arm down and he said, I'm a bad man. I was a bad man, I did bad things. And I got to look at him and I got to say to him, Dad, you're no longer that man. You've had a spiritual experience, you've changed, you're different today. I heard his amend. What a gift that was to receive. And how grateful I am that I could hear it. Because you see, those were the last meaningful words that my father and I ever exchanged. So what a gift. And I wanna share, you know, a lot of us talk about in the ninth step, we talk about the three columns, right away, maybe sometime soon, and the third one when hell freezes over. And I had somebody on that never, when hell freezes over, a men's side for years. It was an embarrassment to me. I couldn't stand it. And over the course of the years, things had changed. The man, his name is Bob. Bob is my, I jokingly call him my ex-husband. He was he's Marilyn's ex-husband, but he was more my ex-husband some days than hers. So anyways, Bob and I would have screaming matches. He'd turn his back to me. It was not pretty. And there was no way I was ever going to make that amend to Bob. And what ended up happening was is that my stepdaughter became very ill, had emergency surgery. He pulled us to the side and said, I can't do it anymore. I can't do it by myself. Can you help? And according to Marilyn, I was the first one to say, of course, we'd be more than happy to help. And that started us down a path of meeting with him weekly, having lunch with him, or meeting with him monthly, having lunch with him, sharing the experience. We became, over the course of the next year and a half, 2 years, friends. Healing had taken place in a situation that there was no way I could have ever done. And God had to do it and not me. Bob passed away suddenly a year and a half ago, almost 2 years ago. And my wife and I, Marilyn, did most of the work in getting the house ready for sale. I did a lot of the paperwork, getting things ready for his estate. He had shared things with me before he passed. There were things that were happening where healing had come in, where God couldn't have done it. And it was because of my changed belief and my changed attitudes. And what a gift that was, that when he passed, we were okay. We actually liked each other. We laughed together. One of the last times I got to see him was Marilyn was going out of town, and I said, I'll go to lunch with Bob. And it was just Bob and I, and we had a great time. So there's healing that took place. I have four more minutes, I think. And I'd love to tell you about 10, 11, and 12, but I'm out of time. But what I want to tell you about is what's happening today. I talked about, I have a son. We have a son. Marilyn and I have a son. He's 32 years old. He got married a little bit over a year, year and a half ago. They have a beautiful little baby girl. What a joy that is. He has recently entered the rooms of AA himself. What a gift. He called his mom and said, I have a problem. And we knew exactly where to send him. We had friends in the rooms, and we knew exactly who to introduce him to. And what a gift that was, because we knew he was, I knew years ago that he was probably our next baby drunk, and sure enough, he was. He's doing well in recovery. He's working hard on his steps. He's in the middle of his inventory and not liking it, which tells me he's doing it right. So I'm very grateful for that. I talked about my stepdaughter. I shouldn't be crying, but I am. My stepdaughter, she's almost 42 years old. She has multiple disabilities. She's not doing well, physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. And it's tough. It's tough. And Marilyn and I spend a lot of time on the couch in the mornings talking about what was the new awakening that we had over the night. What's the new awareness we had? What can we do to be of use and service? And we want to talk about unity. Marilyn and I are on the same page as far as how to deal with my stepdaughter now. And I need to tell you, it's not pretty, and it's kind of painful sometimes to have to think about some of the decisions we make. And some of the decisions are not what you would want to hear in Al-Anon. You know, after a long time in Al-Anon, you're supposed to think that everything that happens in my world is kumbaya, and it's not. What ends up happening is that we may have to separate from this child because it's not safe. And although she doesn't have alcoholism, I really wish she did, because I'd love to see her leaning up against the wall with a drink in her hand, slurring her words. And then I could say, oh, that's alcoholism, and I know what to do with it. But because it's not, because it's mental illness and a few other issues, that's not an option for me. So what I have to do is, you know, we may have to pull away, and I have a new understanding and a new compassion for parents who are dealing with adult children, because I understand how painful and relentless that feeling is and how exhausting it is. And there are days when I am just beat up. And I know there are days when my wife is beat up too. And the best we can do sometimes is just sit on the couch and be quiet and breathe. 8:10, I wrote down 7:40 when I started. I am done. Thank you so much for inviting me. It's been an honor and a pleasure. Thank you.